Chapter 7, The End of the Race. When the Lady Wilma entered the blue bay of Callao, Jack counted 31 sailing ships at anchor. He was disappointed that nowhere to be seen was the high-riding Sea Raven.
"She's loaded up with coal and fresh water," snapped Captain Swain. "Loaded up and skedaddled."
Nevertheless, smiles were the order of the day. After months at sea, the gold seekers looked upon the sunny little town as if it were Paris or London, and they couldn't wait to get ashore. Hardly had the mooring lines been thrown out like bullwhips when the men began to leap to the wharf.
"Master Jack, shall we go ashore?" said Praiseworthy.
"I'd like that fine," smiled Jack.
Jack posted another letter home to Boston, and the streets thronged with sailors and gold seekers, and in the distance the great Andes rose like painted scenery, and the town wasn't a great deal larger than the ship that they had just left at the fueling wharf, but it was land, dry land. Jack had almost forgotten the smell of dust in his nostrils, and he breathed it in like perfume. And the butler and the boy rode about on mules, and the day had all the excitement of a picnic. Later in the afternoon, Mr. Azariah Jones hailed them into a sunny plaza.
"Look here," he beamed. "I bought the last pick and shovel left in town. Since the California fever started, the shelves are bare, I can tell you, and the washpan thrown in for good measure. They're yours."
"Voila," said Monsieur Gaunt, appearing out of the crowd and dropping a pick and shovel at their feet. "I have got my hands on the last ones in town, and a washpan too, my friends."
Then he stopped to glare at the Yankee trader who was already glaring at him.
"Gentlemen," smiled Praiseworthy, "I think we can safely say that you have found the last two picks and shovels left in Callao. They're bound to bring us luck, Master Jack and I."
His words of gratitude were interrupted by the clanging of the Lady Wilma's bell, calling the gold seekers back to their ships.
"Hurry, boys," shouted Mountain Jim. "The wild bull of the seas would be mighty glad to leave us without us."
There was a wild rush for the wharf, but when Jack turned, Praiseworthy was no longer standing beside him. Jack's hair nearly stood on end. The butler was gone.
"Praiseworthy!"
The ship's bell rang through the air, but Jack didn't know which way to run. He couldn't leave Praiseworthy behind. Hadn't he heard the ship's warning bell? What had happened to him?
"Praiseworthy!"
Jack was unable to move, as if he anchored to the spot by the pick and shovel. He had to fight back a welling up of tears. The Lady Wilma was going to leave without with them. And then, from the doorway of the nearby shop, the butler appeared, tall and elegant in his bowler hat and white gloves, carrying the new pick and shovel over his one shoulder and a washpan under an arm, and the strange package wrapped in newspaper and string dangling freely from his hand. Jack had never been so happy to see anyone in his life.
"Hurry," he cried desperately. "We'll be left behind."
"Not likely," said Praiseworthy. "I had to stop off and make a small purchase for our good captain himself. Come along, Master Jack."
Jack tried not to let Praiseworthy see that he had been close to tears. He threw the pick and shovel across one shoulder, gathered up the washpan, and together the boy and the butler hurried towards the wharf. One by one, alley cats picked up their trail, and by the time they reached the ship, it looked as if that every stray in Callao was after them. Before the gangway could be raised, at least a dozen assorted cats followed Praiseworthy aboard, and in their stocking caps, the crew was busy throwing off hawsers and preparing for sea to bother with the invasion of Peruvian cats. Jack dropped the heavy pick and shovel with a clang to the deck and looked at Praiseworthy's package.
"A dead rat?" he asked.
"Hardly," replied the butler.
"Cheese?
Not likely."
Fresh kidney?
"Exactly," said Praiseworthy, raising the package out of the reach of the cats. "Captain Swain is extraordinarily fond of kidney pie, and I promised to teach the cook an old recipe my great-great-grandfather used to prepare for the Duke of Chinsley."
But at the moment, Captain Swain was in no temper for kidney pie, and the ship had taken on fresh water, but not an ounce of fuel. "Blast the Sea Raven!" he was bellowing. "She filled her bunkers and piled her decks with coal. Hills of it! Mountains of it! Taking every lump to be had in Callao, and she's made sure that there wasn't a cinder left for us!" Once at sea, the Lady Wilma picked up a friendly breeze. If her coal bunkers were empty, she was at least lighter in the water and went skimming across her course. The Peruvian cats learned to bound out of sight every time the husky-throated boatswain came along, threatening to toss them overboard. In an unguarded moment, a snap of wind carried off Praiseworthy's bowler hat, and it went tumbling into the sea, filled with water, and sank. Praiseworthy was left speechless and hatless. For 3 or 4 days, he was not quite himself, and he missed the hat, and he could hardly felt like a butler without it. But Jack thought he looked just fine. A week later, as the heat bore down on the deck, Praiseworthy began tying a handkerchief around his head, and Jack liked that even better. "You look like a pirate," he smiled. "Nonsense, Master Jack," said Praiseworthy. Hoping for the supply of coal, Captain Swain dropped anchor in the Galapagos, but there was nothing to be had except a few cords of stove wood on those barren islands, and there was even less to see except the sharks in the bay. The Lady Wilma pushed on, and with the rush for gold, steamers were only just being sent around the horn to the Pacific, and fueling stops are rare. Weeks later, off the coast of Mexico, a sudden excitement raced along the deck of the gold ship. The Sea Raven had been sighted. She was lumbering through the sea, low in the water, weighted down by the extra tons of coal. They stood in enormous big piles on her weather decks. "Billy be hanged!" shouted Mountain Jack. "We're going to pass her up!" Jack stood on the ratlines and his heart raced with delight. The Sea Raven looked half sunk in the sea, and her passengers could be seen at the rails, glum and silent as the Lady Wilma pulled ahead. "By grabs," Captain Swain beamed, doing a little jig on the paddle box. "I guess if there's anything heavier than a ton of bricks, it's a ton of coal!" By the time the brown hills of California appeared off the port side, the Lady Wilma was well in the lead. And meanwhile, the Peruvian cats had Peruvian kittens. "I'll drown 'em, every one of them," swore the boatswain. But he had to catch them first, and they ran for cover whenever he approached, disappearing within seconds. They found every hiding place aboard the ship and invented new ones. Jack tried hard to ignore them, for good luck had taught him a lesson. But in the end, he was pulling out of the galley scraps at night, and every morsel would be gone by morning. Dr. Buckby spent his days fishing with the line tied around his peg leg, and he would drowse in the sun until a tug aroused him. But when his back was turned, the fish would disappear as if into thin air. The wily cats grew fatter. As San Francisco and the end of their long voyage drew nearer, the gold seekers began to trim their beards again, and they packed and repacked their sea chests. And they scrubbed their clothes, and they hummed and whistled and sang the same tune. "I'm going to California with a washbowl on my knee." Jack's thoughts raced ahead to the gold fields. What would it be like? Would there be grizzly bears and outlaws and wild Indians? Certainly, he told himself. It was an untamed place, wasn't it? What was the use of an untamed place if there weren't wild Indians and outlaws and grizzly bears? "We ought to have a gun," he told Praiseworthy.
"A gun? Why? To protect ourselves?"
"Stuff and nonsense," said the butler. But Jack noticed that the other gold seekers busily cleaning sidearms and rifles and sharpening their knives, and he wished he had a gun, a four-shooter maybe, or even an old army musket with a bayonet. One bright morning, with San Francisco not more than a day's run, the bountiful winds died away, but afternoon clouds had gathered in the sky, and headwinds bore down on the gold ship as if to drive her back in her wake. With the steam in her boilers, the Sea Raven came steadily on course, and by dusk, she came upon the Lady Wilma passing with a wild shout of glee and a victorious blast of her whistle.